No fool, no pet. I'm all out of cigarettes.
I ain't got no cigarettes. 50 cents border rent. Yeah, there you go. Race chat live. We are without our audio here tonight. Something went wrong with the speaker box, so we'll try to have that fixed by next week, but not much we can do about it right now. It's another Thursday night with Race Chat Live with Chris and Craig. Got Stat there as our producer. Looking forward to a big night. Got a lot to talk about. Dylan Scott and Trevor Woodard are going to be our first guests on here tonight. Well, that's first guest and only guest, but guess what, guests? They're going to be on together. So we're going to get a handful of good action here tonight on Race Chat Live. Good to have Craig already in his seat. Of course, Stats doesn't leave his. And
that's just wrong. Hey, listen.
I always expect Stats to be sitting down, that's for sure. So it's just a couple of minutes here before we bring on Dylan Scott and Trevor Woodard of the Mid-South Big Ten Street Stock Series. I just went over a bio there on our earlier Race Chat Live audio check feed. So you got their bio. Now it's time to actually talk to the drivers. But first, I want to thank Fit for Life, I-95 Network, Mile High Radio. Those guys help us syndicate this. Of course, the 110 Nation, Sports Nation, Nation Sports Group, Blog Talk Radio Group, they help fund this. And without them, none of this would be possible. So a big shout out to those guys and all the hardworking team at the 110 Nation. It's a small group of people, but they're really dedicated to put on great talk shows every night of the week except for Saturday and Sunday. So just good to be a part of that group and all. Greg Moore, I told you earlier in a conversation that the asphalt was melting down here in Mississippi, and you claimed it was just as hot up there. How the heck are you, Craig?
You know what? How did you like that race, boys and girls, Saturday night?
Eric Jones, I mean, my goodness. Craig Moore, he put on a show for the fans, and people want to undermine what he did, and I want to remind people, as I've talked to you and the other people in the group here, he beat Martin Truex Jr., so it's not that he didn't earn the win. He beat the current points champion and did it in high fashion.
Absolutely, but getting back to the weather, we'll talk about that because that's a win for most everywhere, especially here in upstate New York where they're super prevalent. The weather up here, 75 degrees. It's nice. You guys, we've turned up the heat a little bit. You guys can send it up here anytime you'd like. I 2 weeks ago it was so hot, your sweat had sweat, and today it's nice and cool. So, and I know it's coming in about 2.5 months, so I'll take all the heat we can get.
Yeah, in about 2.5 months, my friend Craig Moore can be ice fishing. So, really, it's hard to compare the types of weather between upstate New York and down dirty South Mississippi humidity weather. So, hey, y'all get a little taste of it. Oh, my gosh, guys, we just lost the live feed. Oh, this is going to be one of those days. Craig Moore, would you pick it up from here and get this fixed real quick, buddy?
Yeah. We got some guys from the Big Cat Mid-South. Super excited for that. And then, but Saturday night at the race down at Daytona was phenomenal. Friday night at the Xfinity race, well, that was another story. It was a good night for Joey. Kyle Larson, not so good for the number 24. I forget who was driving that car. But Joey his second Xfinity race, and he went and made a dive bomb pass. And inadvertently put his two wheels below the double yellow line, and that is a no-no in NASCAR's eyes. We're going to talk about that later. Let's see, his name was Justin Haley, drove the number 24. Only a second Xfinity race. He was ruled not the winner because he went below the double yellow line. So I got a question for everybody, and I'm going to create a poll about it here in a little while on NASCAR, on the Race Chat Live page. And that's, should NASCAR do without the yellow line rule? Should they go away with the yellow line rule? I know it's a safety issue, but they don't have it at tracks like Michigan, Charlotte. They use it at Las Vegas. They don't use it at Las Vegas. So they only use it at Daytona and Talladega. I know the speeds are up there, and there's reasons why they use them. But if they're going to make it uniform at two tracks, they ought to make it uniform at all those tracks. That's my opinion. I'm going to get yours on there later with a poll. But are our guests in the studio yet?
Rick Moore, I am back, and I think that we have our live feed going. Again, it is 7:05, so hopefully we'll have our guests on very quickly here. I'm actually sharing the live feed at this very moment, so if we can introduce Dylan Scott and Trevor Woodard to the podcast here, I'm really looking forward to talking to them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're on, guys. They're on, guys.
All right.
Sounds great.
Gentlemen,
all right.
How are you?
We're making it. How are y'all?
You know what? We're good up here up north. I like the weather up here so far. But welcome to Race Chat Live. I like it only because, like I, you were listening earlier, it's going to get snowing in about 30 below in a couple of months. So I'll take all the hot weather we can get. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and we're just going to let you guys run with it.
Also, Craig, we need to bring on Trevor Woodard. Trevor, are you there?
I'm the only one that said anything so far.
Okay, we're still waiting on Trevor.
No, we're both.
I said I had both of them.
Yeah, there we go. We got both of them on. Yeah, so this one is a little bit different, guys. And race fans that are listening, we normally do individual interviews, but these guys requested to be on together. I feel like that was a good request because a lot of times when you got people that are on with each other, they really know each other well, and they bring some really good stories and all. So it's going to be done a little bit different tonight than how we normally do it. As Craig said, guys, we're going to bring y'all on. We're going to let y'all roll with this, but we will be able to be here and ask questions and kind of keep y'all in motion. But first of all, obviously the friendship started at a racetrack, right?
Yeah, it did. We went to grade school together, and we played Little League baseball and all that together growing up. So, and we've always hung out at the racetrack, like you said, whether it was playing behind the fence, playing football, not even watching races, just had to come. Yeah.
And that's Trevor, right? You're Trevor?
Yes, sir.
All right, Dylan, tell us about the beginning friendship there with Trevor. How it all started and – and what got y'all to be such close friends and competitors too?
Well, we grew up playing in the dirt at the racetrack, you know, watching Trevor's daddy race, my daddy race, and, you know, it's all just a big racing family down there. We didn't really have no choice to be friends, and it just good times and just. Heck, I don't know, just a little bit of everything, ball, like he said, high school.
So y'all are both from a racing family, and that's kind of where the humble beginnings started. Did you ever expect to compete with each other and kind of just follow each other around in this racing circuit, or are you kind of surprised looking back on it that this friendship has grown into what it is?
Well, back when I first started, I run the mini stock class for about 3 or 4 years. And then Trevor come in behind me, and they started this new class called the mini open wheel class, Thunder Hill. Well, we raced against each other for what, 3 years?
Yeah, 3 years. That's when they made me move up.
Trevor definitely got the best of me.
We built them mini open wheel cars to run on a four-cylinder motor. They were just like a big open wheel could be cut down and put Pinto front and rear or Mustang front and rear under them, and they were all tube chassis cars, and we had about 20 of them and kind of tried to make our own class out of the deal.
Right.
And a bunch of people built them here in this area, and that's Dylan come out of the mini stocks into the mini open wheels because they already had all the motors and the parts, spare parts and that stuff. We started off as competitors against each other.
Wow. So wait a minute. One of you just said that you got kicked out. Trevor, I believe it was you, right? You got kicked out of the class that you helped build. You were obviously dominating, right? Or what got you kicked out?
Three track championships in three in a row, and there towards the end of that third year, the track owner that also helped us build the class. Like he kept us, we kept it all at that one class with him, and he, you know, ran us every week, no matter what the car count was, or you know. If it struggled or if it was good, he never said nothing about it. He said, I'll support y'all 100% trying to build this class. Because he loved racing just like the rest of us.
Right.
And I won three championships in a row. And he in a nice way, kicked us out of class. my dad actually got in the car that I won the three championships in and won the fourth one.
Oh, kept it in the family.
Yeah.
You say
he built me a stock car, a modified street car, that year. He nicely told us that he would appreciate it if I didn't run the mini open wheels next year.
Right. Well, typically, how many cars were showing up at the time? You said you built about 20 of them. So, how many? Was it a strong class? And obviously, needing you to kind of help bring in a fourth. Is it still a class available today?
No, they phased them out. I mean, there's still some around, but they're running like the outlaw mini stock KMSA stuff. Some of them cars have been built out of the mini open wheel chassis that we originally built.
Wow, interesting. So tell us about the transition.
21 of them in a winter.
21 of them in a winter.
21 of them.
Yep. And how many wins were they able to accumulate? All of them?
Heck, man, I don't know. No, there were a couple that come from up north. They bought them up there. I didn't keep up with it then. It's like Dylan said, we was 15 years old.
Right. Now let me ask you something. Is this similar to like the sports mods or the e mods that I've seen?
No, they're shorter. They was a lot shorter than they had four cylinder motors in them.
Wow.
And you say you're from up north? They have like a mini mod class up there. They ran them up there some.
Yeah, that's
so Craig
Moore.
Like
okay.
They're more of a they had the four cylinder like the pony motors.
Right.
Yeah,
Dylan,
that's what we have up here.
Dylan, tell us about following the footsteps of Trevor and also talk a little bit about your own success and what keeps you driving, man. What's that force behind you?
He said he wants to know a little bit about
what keeps you driving. Well, after Trevor got out of the open wheel class, I stayed in it for another year. I think I won about six races that year, and then I kind of got bored with it. I was ready to go back to mini stock racing.
Yeah.
And we built another car, Mustang. And we run it for probably 10 years. And that's when I took off and started having real good success. And after we went back to the mini stock class, and we ran that class all the way up until last year. And we decided it was time to move on from that and go to bigger and better things.
And the Street Stock Series is definitely a bigger and better thing. I see one of you has already competed a full season. As a matter of fact, the fifth place in the national points from last year. The competition's a little bit stronger in the Street Stock Series than it's been in years past. It's definitely a class that's really got a lot of fire up underneath it. Fans really love the stock car racing. It's grassroots. Tell us about being a part of that, both of you guys, Trevor and Dylan. Well, I want to hear about a weekend away following a series. I want to know what kind of goes with that and what's the preparation behind it, and do you guys travel together?
Yeah, we travel together just about everywhere Trevor goes. I go with him. And if I'm not racing, I'm still there helping. And we enjoy the traveling. we can't do it as much people do, but when we do it, we have a blast.
Right. Mm-hmm. Trevor, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I enjoy the traveling all. That Derek Twain and Neesmith, they built a great road package and have branched out and grew at all the different tracks here in this area. So we can, it's nice to be able to set it, you know, home during the week and like me and Dylan talk about it, where we're going this week.
Right.
He wants to go to Camden. They're having a Big Ten street stock race there next week. So that's great practice for, he wants to go to Camden. I'm not real sure if I'm going to make the trip to Camden with him. I may stay here close to the house.
Uh-huh.
You know, we got a bunch of wins throughout the family at Thunderhill Raceway, so it's 10 minutes from home, so it's hard to pass it up. They're running double features this week.
Oh, it is hard to pass up the double features.
Yeah, they're not sanctioned, but they're still operating under the Neesmith rules, so we're
That's
the neatest thing about the Neesmith. You can't beat it. I mean, I know my car is legal anywhere I show up.
Right.
That made it hard to travel before when nobody else was on the same road package.
Definitely. That's something that we've heard time and time again, how easier it is for the racer to just be able to change a gear instead of having to check some track rules and anything from brakes to the spoiler you're running on the back could be a situation at any given track. With these similar rules, it definitely makes traveling a lot easier. Now, you guys, y'all interact with each other all the time, obviously. Tell us about one of those good moments between each other that y'all had. Maybe a memory that stuck out, or it was just you guys cutting up. Give us a good story here.
The best memory I have of us racing is when Trevor won the last year. That was one of the best experiences I've ever been a part of with a friend. And I wish we could go do it again every year, you know. Maybe they slip in and win a big race or something. The reason I built the stock car was to race with him. And so far it's worked out good. We've touched a few times on the track, but, you know, when we touch, when we bump each other, we leave it on the track. We don't bring it back to the pits.
Right.
And just all around good time all year so far.
So when it comes to preparation time, do you guys work on each other's cars? Do y'all share setups? If Trevor needs a tire or Dylan needs a drive shaft, it's kind of an open door there, right?
Oh yeah, I'm up at Trevor's shop probably two nights a week most of the time. His daddy lived right across the creek from me until I moved about a month ago, and I was up there every day if I wasn't working on my own car.
Right.
And as far as sharing setup, we're a lot alike, and I know every move he makes, and he knows every move I make. we kind of feed off each other and learn what his car does, and I'll try it on mine. We're both trying to get faster every week.
Now, tell us a little bit about your chassis there. Are those in-house chassis, or do you buy them, or what? Do you build them yourself?
My car, me and my daddy built it, Boo Bo Shears, and just about every car we've ever had, we've built ourselves. And that's the funnest part, is building our own car and going out and being successful with it. And Trevor,
yeah,
he also built his own car.
Definitely, you add to the challenge when you build your own race car. But there again, Trevor and Dylan, it's also a benefit side to it, because you guys, anything that happens to those cars, you're pretty much able to figure out because you've already built it and had your hands on it, right?
Yeah, that makes it a lot easier as far as repairing goes. If there's something, you almost take a mental picture of it, like if something's bent, or you know it wasn't like that when you looked at it last week, you know, like you know every piece of it, just like you said, it makes it a lot easier to work on.
It does. So tell us about this season. Dylan, we'll start with you. Dylan, how's your season gone so far, the ups and the downs, and have you got any wins yet?
No, I haven't got any wins yet, but I've only raced 8 times this year. Whenever we set out to build this new car, I didn't want to be a every weekend racer with it. I got 2 girls at home, and I want to spend more time with them. And this was a good class to get in to where you don't get tied in so much. You can go race anywhere you want to. And it just, you know, I've 8 times this year, I think I finished top 5, 3 of those. I finished 5th at North Alabama in the Big Ten race. So that's been my best finish all year.
Yeah, it says right here that you're 13th in points, Dylan. That's not bad for 8 races. And not all of those were series races, right? So you've raced 3 or 4 series races. You're 13th in points. It kind of opens the door for this, for me to believe this, that it gives you guys the opportunity, having a series like this, gives you guys an opportunity to set a date on your schedule and say, hey, this is going to be the race that we go and travel to. This is going to be the race where it's $1,000 to win, and that's good money. I've seen it from both sides, and really taking your – being able to pick and choose isn't such a bad thing these days. They called it cherry picking in the past, but budget racers have to race on their budget, and this gives you guys an opportunity to circle a couple of races that are maybe close to home and gives you a chance to go run for some money.
Yeah, we just every Big Ten race that's on the schedule, I think both of us pretty much have them circled.
Yeah, we're gonna try to make them all.
Those, yeah, and the week before those races, I usually take a week or two off and save my money up and make sure my car is ready to go. That way, it just makes for a good trip. We ain't rushing getting everything together. But Trevor, if there's a gate open, he's going racing.
Trevor, yeah. On the other hand, let's get to Trevor real quick. Trevor, let's hear a little bit about yours. He passed the torch to you on this one. He says when there's a gate open, you're racing.
That's how that works most of the time. I said last week I was going to take a week off. My brother had a gender reveal for his firstborn. I was going to be there for it. He scheduled it on a Saturday night, so I said, I'll take a week off. Winchester Speedway rains out and scheduled it for Sunday at 1:30. So all week long, I said, I'm taking a week off. I haven't worked on the car. It's still setting like it set from the Durant Plain shootout at Talladega. The Independence Day race we had Tuesday night, it's still sitting in the trailer. I get up Sunday morning, my wife looks at me and says, you want to go racing? I said, yep, sure do. Let's go. I went and hooked to the trailer and headed out.
Come on. You didn't grab the tennis shoes, you grabbed the race boots.
Yep, never. And we hooked to the trailer and run probably a little over the speed limit to get there in time. But we made it and got there just in time for hot laps. And had a good, real good turnout for Winchester Sunday. Like Dylan said, one of the things I found out the gate was going to be open, so I had to be there.
Yeah. That's right. It's a golden gate as well when you get there, right? Trevor, how much success have you really had over your time, your career? What keeps you driving, man? What keeps you in a race car every time the gate's open?
Man, it's one of them things, like Dylan said, it's all we've ever really known. My dad, my uncle, they've been racing ever since I can remember. I can remember sleeping in the grandstands watching them. Another thing, like Dylan said, we built our own race car right there in the shop. Me, Daddy, and my cousin Jansen, he also races with us. And if it wasn't for Daddy and Jansen, I couldn't make it to the tracks every weekend like I do. We built it there at the house. Here this past year, I've had it updated by Race Tech, Darrell Beckham at Race Tech. And then we've made some positive notes on the chassis stuff, and I've been doing a lot with War Shocks, Keith Cochran at War Shocks, and he's been helping me a lot on setup. That's like Dylan said, we share all that, and Keith helps him a lot, and I help Dylan, and we work together on a lot of things, and it's all we've ever known.
It's a lifestyle. I mean, it's something that if you're not raised in it and you're not around it, it's hard to understand it, but once you do get to know it and once you are a part of it, you realize how it engulfs you, how racing becomes a part of you. You know, you mentioned that you woke up and you said your wife said, are you going racing? Are we going racing? Obviously, it's deep-rooted into the family as well. And so I guess it's safe to say that it's what this family does, right, Woodard?
Yes, sir, it is. She may not agree with it all the time when I spend the late nights working on it, but she's usually good come Saturday. We gotta go. And I wasn't gonna go Sunday. I wasn't gonna go. And she came in and she said, "You gonna go to Winchester today? They're racing at 1:30." I said, "Let's leave. Let's go now." Yeah, and she got everything ready, and I went and hooked to the car and come back up to the house, picked her up, and we headed out.
She didn't ask if you wanted biscuits and pancakes or sausage and bacon. She asked you, did you want to go racing? That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, we grabbed something to eat on the way there.
Now, you guys are awesome, and we're so glad to have you on. Of course, Jay wanted me to give you all a shout-out for representing the series and coming on and having us do the interview and all. We got quite a few people listening in to us, and we appreciate those guests who are listening. So, Trevor, give us your fondest memory, man. Give us that win that stands out above them all. Tell us a little bit about it.
Man, it'd have to be that ice bowl win that I won. That was just at the unforgettable moment there. I've went to it for probably the past 10 years. I've been at every ice bowl there's been. And I love it. Like I said, it was a dream come true. My dad's raced in it. My uncle's raced in it. We've all tried to go win it. Ain't none of us ever been able to make it happen. Somehow we got all our stars to line up last year, I guess, and it pulled it off.
You know, and I've asked this question to other guests. What is it about Talladega short tracks that just there's so many great memories, so many accomplishments made at the Hornet's Nest? It's just amazing, the history. As a matter of fact, you go on Wikipedia, and it's listed as one of the top 10 tracks in America. Talladega Short Tracks is something very special. Do you know why? Can you give an explanation?
Man, I'd have to say how racy it is. It's the atmosphere, the track surface, the banking, everything just – I love it. I've said numerous times to everybody, if it was closer to home, I'd race there every week.
and being that it's the ice bowl, I know it's the first race of the year, of course. You know, it's right there in week one of January. It's cold, man. It's cold. Like last year, didn't y'all have a problem of the track not even heating up above temperature?
Yeah, I'd seen it one year they was racing on it. And I was just spectating at that time. My uncle was racing, and you seen like a shiny spot in the track there. I said, "What is that?" It was frost on the top and the bottom of the racetrack.
Yeah.
Where the groove was at, as long as you stayed all four tires in the groove, you was fine. You stepped out of it, and you spun out.
Right.
It was ice, top
amazing.
And bottom.
Amazing, amazing. Dylan, let's ask you. Obviously, you're still searching for that win in the Street Stock Series. You got a house chassis. Tell us about that. Tell us about that one win or that one memory that kind of sets aside in your memory, Dylan.
Well, back in 2010 and 2011, we won back-to-back Show Me $2,000 races.
Oh.
At Thunder Hill.
Oh.
We had, I think, 55 cars show up the first year.
Stops.
Yeah, mini stocks, and that was kind of my breakout year where I started really winning some races in 2010, and they had that race again, and I finished second in it. Those three races there are probably my biggest accomplishment, and in those years of racing, I had a Cates racing engine. Junior and David Cates was building my engines. And the night before the Show Me Show Me 2000, we was having some engine trouble in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
We pulled the motor out, and David Cates rebuilt the motor that Saturday morning, and we went down there and won with it.
Oh, wow.
That's probably my biggest memory.
Talk about sweating bullets. You have a motor, it blows up. You got that pain in your heart because you don't know, you know, what's going to happen from here. Next thing you know, you get a motor, and then like 12 hours later, you're sitting in victory lane.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. And not only that, 2 days before that, me and Trevor lost a real good friend of ours, and they ran that race in his memory.
Oh,
it was actually Trevor's first cousin.
Yep.
And he was my best friend, and we went out and won that race for him. And it's just a big deal. It always sits in my heart, and I think about it every time we go to the raceback.
Wow. Dylan, while we've got you on, tell us what you expect out of this year. Of course, a new chassis. I do want to back up real quick because I know you guys said something about you had the extra parts and stuff, but what really brought you to the Street Stock Series? And I guess, Dylan, we'll start with you, and then I'll come back to the other question. Dylan, what really got you open to the idea, hey, I'm going to go race a Street Stock? Or build a street stock chassis. I mean, this is not going and seeing something that you know, a good deal on Facebook or something like that. You guys have got to be committed once you start buying the tubing.
All right. 2 years ago, or was it 3 years ago, that Michael Blade won the Street Stock Nationals?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. Michael Blade won the Street Stock Nationals.
Yes,
he
I remember.
He helped me build my first race car.
Oh, Michael Plate has been a past guest with us.
Yeah, and me and Trevor grew up watching Michael race mini stock class and dominated. And then he got a street stock, and we always followed him. And he won that Street Stock Nationals, and that was my first time there.
Uh-huh.
And from that point on, I said, I don't have any street stock car. That was the biggest experience of watching a race I've ever seen. It just blew my mind how they did it.
The 2016 Southern Street Stock Nationals got you hooked just like that at the House of Hook.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I tell them all the time.
And then we go back the next year. And David Earl Gentry, he's
local.
He's from the same area as us. And he wins the race.
Yes,
so I'm
last
like,
lap,
I got
dramatic
to have one
finish.
Dylan called. He said Gentry will win this race. There was a caution. He was like 13th. He said Gentry's coming to win this race. I said I'd like to see it, but I'd way back. Yeah, he
we
come
watched,
on to win it.
We watched him pass every car. And,
wow.
My first race, I rolled out on the track this year. I was right beside David Gentry. I never in this world would have thought I've been racing against David Gentry. And that's one reason I'm having so much fun. I'm racing against drivers that I never would have got to race against if I didn't build this car.
Right. Wow. No,
but
I want to
bust off top five finishes. That's my goal. I want to be consistent top five. Obviously the goal is to win, but the competition is strong.
Yes,
and this is my first year, and I still ain't got my feet ain't hardly even wet in the car yet. I'm just learning, you know. And five at North Alabama was a pretty big deal to us, and I want to keep doing that.
Dylan, I guess it's safe to say your expectations is to try to make the race for the Southern Street Stock Nationals, right? I mean, you're not going to miss that
Yes.
one.
Yes. I plan on being there if nothing major gets tore up before then.
Okay. Now, Trevor, go ahead. I'm sorry, Dylan. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm going to race Camden this week and next week, and then I'm parking my car until the Nationals.
I heard that. Trevor, I guess kind of what's your story? How did you end up in the street stock division? What was that turning point when you said, I got to go buy some tubing and get this street stock built because we're going street stock racing?
Well, we moved out of that mini open wheel class, mm-hmm. and then we moved into what was they called a modified street class here. And it was pretty similar to the Neesmith stuff. It wasn't as open. We didn't have no crate motor option or nothing like that, you know, to be really user-friendly. You had just a 480 lift Camaro and open motors. Well, that's what I moved to when I moved out of that mini open wheel, and I run it for that same car probably the next 7 years or so. And it, I mean, I crashed it, flipped it, bent the frame, we'd pull it back out. I mean, just went through the school of hard knocks, I guess, with it.
But it held up.
And you know, my dad and my uncle, they run it all my life. So
right.
that's why I moved into it. When I moved out of the mini open wheel, they said, well, we know stock car racing. So
that's we know stock car racing. I mean, that's something that's forgotten. You know, modified, late models, they all come afterwards, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's they started in granny cars. Like they were, we talked about it, kind of reliving some stuff with them the other night, just up there talking, and they was talking about driving cars home, beating the windows out of them, and putting a cage in them.
And those were the days, for sure.
Yep.
I'm seeing it more now, though, and guys, don't hammer me because I know you're street stock drivers, but these four-cylinder guys, I think they're finally getting the picture. I think I'm seeing a lot of cars that I think could still be going down the highway. All of a sudden, they've got roll cages in them and missing headlights.
Dylan's a four-cylinder guy at heart, I promise.
Yeah, he likes the bumblebee effect, huh?
Yeah.
You find me one right now, I'll drive it.
I got one right here in the driveway. Needing a sponsor. Oh, Honda Prelude.
Oh, that ain't a mini stock in our book.
Yeah, no.
It's got to be a
We'll call it a hot shot. That's what they call them down here. So, but they're called U-Cars. I mean, they've been, you know, there's a lot of different names to these buzz cars and to the hot shots. Of course, a mini stock is a lot different class, guys, than your typical hot shot class. Mini stock is those motors sometimes can cost just as much as a late model motor. So, or you can have as much money into it as you want. Let's put it like that.
That's for sure.
Trevor Woodard, what is your
four-cylinder motor?
Oh yeah, definitely. Trevor Woodard, what is the expectations for this year?
Man, I set out this year to try to finish up top five of the Big Ten points. I didn't run with the Mid-South Big Eight last year as much. We kind of concentrated. We got caught up in that national points battle.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really set the year off last year for that, just with Neesmith being a sanctioned track there here close to home. We raced for track points and Neesmith points at the same time.
Right.
So we averaged a good car count and was able to ease in on that top five finish. So I told, you know, I talked to Albert Rich a lot, and I like it Mid-South Big Ten series that they put together. And I told him I'd support him. I'm going to try to be at every race he puts on.
Right. Now, it's sitting seventh in points, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Still got a chance for the championship.
My first one was not a good outing, but it happens.
Yeah. Okay, we've talked about where we're going to go from here, and we've talked a little bit about the past. Let's talk about those that have helped y'all get to where you are. We'll start with you, Dylan. Dylan, I know it takes a lot of effort, and it takes a lot of people, of course, the wife, the kids. There's day-to-day bills. Tell us what keeps you on track, man, and where does most of your help come from?
Well, I'd like to start off with my wife and kids letting me get away from the house every so often to work on the car. If I didn't have her support me, I wouldn't do it. I think she loves it at times just as much as I do, if not more. And then, you know, my daddy, he he pretty much keeps me going. If I didn't have him around, I wouldn't do it at all. If you know, if he ever said we're done, I can't do it no more, I'm just gonna go help Trevor.
I hear you.
But you know, my dad and my mom, you know, Timmy Woodard, Jansen Woodard, Bryce Wood, Ryan Marshall, and Randy Ziegler. That's my help on a weekly basis. They keep us straight. They keep us, you know, just help us get everything that needs to be done.
Well, definitely, we want to thank them for being the help that you need to get to these racetracks and being a part of Dylan Scott Racing. I'm really looking forward to seeing you come down to the Street Stock Nationals in August. It's going to be a big event. Last year we had, I think, 115 cars in the Street Stock division. It's a massive race, y'all, throughout the country. If you've never heard about the Southern Street Stock Nationals, it's in Why Not Mississippi, which is right outside Meridian, Mississippi, at the House of Hook, Why Not Motorsports Park. It's coming up August 16th, 17th, and 18th. Make sure that you put and mark that one on your calendar. But, guys, you got an event coming up at Camden, right? It's the Camden 25. Yeah. And you'll be there.
I think that's the 21st.
Okay. Now, what are Trevor?
We'll
Trevor, tell us about that group that helps you get along, man, the ones that are a part of your race team and the sponsors and, of course, the family.
Well, I'm going to hit on a little bit like Dylan did a minute ago. I got to thank my wife right off the bat. She's the one that kind of glues us all together.
Very wise.
She, if it wasn't for her taking care of, you know, everything else and letting us really concentrate on the racing, we wouldn't be able to do as much as we do.
Right.
I got to thank my dad for sure. He's as eat up with racing, if not worse, than I am. And he said it numerous times. He don't care nothing about driving it no more. He enjoys watching me do it.
Right.
My cousin Jansen, he's there every day with us. We work out of the same shop. We race out of the same shop. He's a big help. When I can't make it out, he'll call me, hey, what do you need done? I gotta think as far as setup help goes, you know, I deal with Keith Cochran at Warshocks a lot. They're good help. The updates that Darrell Beckham at Racetech put on the car for me, he made it a complete 180. I thought I had a good race car, though. I took it to him. Circle Z Race Cars, he come on board and sponsored us this year. That's Ronnie and Randy Ziegler. They're good help. I mean, we share a lot of crew members, me and Dylan do. We'll park together, save each other a spot. Anybody needs something done, hey, just holler, and our guys will help out. As far as sponsors go, I got Smith Constructors, Chapman Lawn Care, Carroll's Tire and Wheel, Wheelerfield Chop Shop, Murray Farmers Co-op. They keep all our Hoosier tires in stock for us. That's our local Hoosier dealer. Bronner's Southern Fried Treats, Zach and Alicia Bronner. They always hook us up with some deep fried Snickers or some funnel cakes or something. I like going to the races some with Carolyn Spurgeon and them. Scotty Spurgeon that races against us, their son, Chade Spurgeon. He's autistic, and this seems to be the one thing they found that lets him get away. He loves it. Anything to do with racing. So you'll see us all mentioning Team Chade. We're doing that, and then, you know, we have old Outlaw comes, hangs out, and helps us out when he can. George Sisson, they call him the Outlaw. I think
yeah,
you know
he's
who he
down
is,
our way. We know a little bit about Outlaw.
Yep. And it all brought us together through a racetrack. It's crazy how I met him.
He was
at the Ice Bowl, and I didn't know it.
No.
So he comes to Thunder Hill. The opening race, he seen a race car go by. He said he followed it to the track. Didn't even know where he was headed.
No.
He said he seen me pull on the racetrack, and they said my name. He said, well, that's the guy I won Ice Bowl last year. He come to my beer, man. We've been good buddies ever since.
George is one of a kind for sure. That's crazy. He followed the race car to the racetrack. That's a man who loves racing, no doubt. The outlaw. That's him through and through.
Yep.
And his racing buddy, Racer, right?
Yep. He had him with him.
Awesome.
For sure.
Well, guys, we want to thank y'all for taking your time to come onto the show here tonight. And we look forward to talking to you guys again. And I hope that it worked out well with y'all two being on here together. It really sounds like there's a lot of help going on between the two race teams. It's also amazing that, you know, in this day and age of buying this and getting this worked on here, that you guys build your own chassis, that you're in the shop, you're preparing your own race cars. That's a tradition that seems to be drifting away. So it's always great to talk to guys who are, you know, fully involved with their program. And I understand some people don't have the time, and some people are better off purchasing their equipment from other places. But it is something special about these guys who race their own what they build themselves. I think that's the integrity that has started a lot of this, and so it's awesome to see guys still willing to put in that shop work.
Oh yeah, we don't know no other way than building our own cars.
Well, I tell you what, we've talked to a lot of guys from Tennessee, and one thing about it, y'all love dirt track racing, and I guess being where you're from, there's a lot of heroes that you guys look up to, and I probably have heard this more than any of them. When I ask who is your favorite hero growing up, most of you guys say my dad. Is that the case with y'all too? Well, I already gathered that, guys, and that's why I said that as well. But if excluding your dad, who was it that you guys watched growing up? Dylan, who was it that you remember the most racing growing up as a kid?
I know I race against him now, but I got to say David Earl Gentry.
I kind of wondered if that's where you had already given us that one. Yeah, definitely. David Earl Gentry. Okay, what about you, Trevor?
Man, I'm with Dylan on that one. I got, you know, we got some tough competition from this area. It's, you know, with,
y'all do.
With David Earl Gentry and, you know, like, say, Johnny Stokes. Johnny Stokes come to Thunder Hill one night. I remember I was a little bitty. May have been 5 or 6 years old, and he just blistered that racetrack. I mean, he was bad fast. And to say I run with him at the Ice Bowl, you know, and made that happen, that's the first thing I told him in that interview. I said, I just outrun a legend.
That's right.
And that's one of them things we can't, you know, they're all clean experience. I mean, it's awesome with this Neesmith Rules that we can show up and race with them guys.
Well, we've got
I've chased Gentry more than I've outrun him, I promise. But you can't complain about running second to those guys.
Definitely not. A guy by the name of Chris Coinhold.
Yeah, I know who he is.
He said, best race ever when Trevor beat the big money cars at the Ice Bowl with his homemade car.
Yeah.
That's something we won't never forget.
Yeah. Dylan actually live streamed it out of the infield, man. And if you haven't watched that video, I need to send it to you in a private message or something. It's unreal to see the reaction on my dad's face. Just capture the moment. That was a unreal moment, man.
Cool. Well, guys, we love the fact that y'all have come on, and definitely the Mid-South Big Ten Street Stock Series. Has two other great drivers that we've gotten to know here tonight, Trevor Woodard and Dylan Scott. Thank goodness I didn't switch you guys' last names up. I feel like I almost did that. But Dylan Woodard and Trevor Scott, thank you guys for being on here. If I was going to mess it up, I might as well just go on and mess it up now for sure.
Yeah,
but,
go on and get it over with.
That's exactly
before we get off here, I'd like to thank some of my sponsors, if y'all don't mind.
No, that's – go ahead, Dylan.
All right, I got 166 Bodies, Donald and Michael Estes, G&M Construction, Columbia Radiator, Floyd and Floyd Contractors, Warshot, Centos, the uniform people, Murray Farmers Co-op, Bruce Odom, and Tire Blenders.
All righty. Well, guys, once
again,
And we would like to thank them as well for being a part of that, because without them, guys, I couldn't have got an interview from y'all. So good luck. The 21st, I believe it's at Camden, the Camden 25. And we're looking forward to seeing both you guys August 16th, 17th, and 18th for the 6th annual Durance Lane, Neesmith, Southern Street Stock Nationals. Quick question. Is Michael Blade going to come on back down again? I haven't seen him this year.
I talked to Michael Sunday, and I don't know if he's racing or not, but he had his car sold, and the deal folded or something, and he's keeping his car.
So I would say
he would probably be there.
Keep us updated. That's always exciting to hear about a past winner that could possibly be there. So, guys, thank y'all very much for being on. We'll look forward to having y'all on again later on in the year, maybe next year. But always keep us around and check out Race Chat Live even when it's the next guy's on, okay? Thank y'all.
All right. Thanks for having us.
Yes, sir. All right, race fans. Well, that concludes our interview portion of Race Chat Live. Dylan Scott, Trevor Woodard, you make your opinion. I think that the interview was great, and these guys are awesome. Good for racing. It's good to see home group guys building their own race cars, going out and racing. Craig, I kind of put you there on the back burner. I disappointed you again this week. I didn't have the top 10 list ready for the funny questions for the drivers. The 110 Nation Sports top 10 questions. You did ask me about that, and unfortunately, I have not I haven't redone it, so we were not going to embarrass ourselves again this week with that. But guess what, Craig? We've got 3 more weeks of interviewing street stock guys. We're in our street stock madness a month till the Southern Street Stock Nationals. This is the crown jewel event for Southern Street Stock racers. Really looking forward to it. Of course, there's money throughout the field. The Philip Hadcock, Rodney Wing, they make this race worth it. So you guys come down. Of course, if you're around the Camden area, Camden Speedway, make sure that you're over there for the Camden 25 coming up next Saturday. We'll go into our next portion, and this will end the current live feed that we have. Thank you guys for listening. Remember to check back with us next week, Race Chat Live. We'll have 2 more interviews to do for you guys. Thank you all for listening. All right, Craig, we've ended that live feed. I guess it's time to talk a little bit about some NASCAR. First of all, I want to talk about Kyle Bronson, of course. I hit it in the earlier message. He has changed from the Sweet Bloomquist back to the XR1 Rocket chassis. Of course, that's the new Rocket chassis that they have. I had stated that he was switching back, but it was actually that he was in a Longhorn, and then he was with the Sweet Bloomquist. Now he's going to be in the XR1. Rocket chassis. So looking forward to Kyle Bronson. Look, he's not the big money guy. He's running on a limited fund, but running the national series. So it's, you know, always, he's a local guy from Florida. So support him. He's doing a little bit of chassis change. Also, Chris Ferguson announced that at almost the same time that he was changing chassis, and he's going to be picking up a Sweet Bloomquist chassis. So a little bit of a passing of the potato. And dirt track racing, obviously, Sweet Bloomquist chassis are having no problem selling. So I guess we'll move on into the next segment. Craig, what you got for us tonight here, man?
Well, you know, I was excited. We touched on this a little bit when we were talking about, before we were waiting for these guys to come on, with Eric Jones. And I said it was a win for mullets everywhere, especially up here in upstate New York, where we seem to have a lot of them. Who really surprised me, and I guess it shouldn't, is the JTG Doherty group, Buescher and Allmendinger. They both finished in the top 5, and I was kind of shocked about that. But, of course, Stenhouse took out half the field.
Yeah, there was only about 12 running cars there at the very end.
13 to be exact.
It was a demolition derby, a survival of the demolition derby. I don't think that NASCAR expected to have that kind of race, but, you know, the big ones come early. And we've seen it time and time again. It's, you know, when you get 50 to go and you haven't had any cautions the whole race, you start, you know, kind of begging for the big one, but
when you're halfway, only in the middle of the race, it definitely changes the geographic of it there at the end.
Well, Ronan Keselowski said something really funny. And not funny, ha-ha, but NASCAR is going to stand up and take note. He said, we're not wrecking enough people. They need to try to wreck more people so they'll stop throwing bad blocks. And then he went on to say, throw another bad block, and I'm going to drive right through you and wreck you. So look out in Talladega. That's not really a smart thing to say. But, you know, anybody that's watched Brad Keselowski race over the last 10, 12 years knows that that man is the king of bad blocks. Him and Kyle Busch.
Yeah, of course, in your reference to maybe being about six laps down a couple of years ago at Talladega when he created the big one, we're talking about Brad Keselowski there for bad blocking. So a car that was, of course, six laps down, was not competitive, created mainly. But, you know, I guess you live and learn through experience, and basically what it was knocking William Byron for his lack of experience, but you know, typically with a rookie, you kind of expect that, don't you, Craig Moore? I mean, it did seem like Keselowski was trying to blame the Chevy camp instead of his own Ford camp.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then, you know, I forget who it was. He said something to the effect of, well, that's racist. I just don't get it. I mean, they are all going to do that. They're all going to race. They're all going to block hard. Every position counts. Every point counts. I don't see the point of doing it so early in a run. But, you know, Stenhouse won the first two segments, which you kind of expect that out of Stenhouse. He did win both the Fisher Plate races last year. But, I thought it was a good race from what I was able to see on NASCAR.com, since I forgot to record it because I forgot that they wouldn't replay it.
Right.
But what I want to talk about real quick is the Xfinity race on Friday night.
Or the truck race. Yeah, the Xfinity race where with Justin Haley, right? Kind of burned you, didn't it, to see that NASCAR lives off of this, whoever crosses the checker lot to the checker flag is the winner. That's why they don't throw cars out after post-race inspection, but yet they penalized Haley for going down below the yellow line on the last lap, even though it was clear that he may have been forced. And I say clear that he may have been forced because...
it wasn't clearly.
I mean, there was... But it was like he was already past him at the time anyway when he did dip below the yellow line. There was a lot of controversy in that, and I'm ready to hear what you have to say about it, Craig.
Well, I mean, he went below the yellow line. He was, from what I watched, and I watched it back a few times on Race Up because I wanted to nail this point, my point home, was he was down below the yellow line, yeah. Where the hell did he come from is what I want to know. He was running fifth or sixth, and he was able to come high, go low. Yeah, he went below the yellow line on point. I said this at the top of the hour. I want to get your thoughts on it, and I know going below the yellow line is a pure safety factor, and I get that. But let's throw that out of the window. Let's throw that out the window for a minute. All right? They don't run that rule at Charlotte. They don't run that rule at any other track that they don't use a restrictor plate on. Why run it at Charlotte and Talladega and Daytona? Either run it consistent to the other 23 tracks, or don't run it at 21 tracks, or don't run it at all. Your
I agree. And I'm confused with the double yellow line as well. So I don't know which line is it that makes you in trouble. I guess it's the double yellow line below the second line. The first line is kind of maybe don't go past here. It's kind of a warning. And then the second yellow line is a penalty, which creates confusion because, of course, there's a double yellow line, so you don't know which one you can touch and which one you can't. or if you can even touch both of them. But I think that this is a rule that is outdated. I can see where, you know, like Dale Jr. tried to say, that the bottom of the track is the shortest distance. So, you know, that being said, anytime a driver can take advantage and shoot to the bottom of a racetrack, remember, Craig Moore, 20 years ago it was all grass down below that area. Now it's mostly paved. I'm thinking that probably in the time that the double yellow line came into effect, it was obviously probably a lot of grass there, and it was a safety issue. We've done a lot of safety improvements, and as you said, I think this rule is a little bit outdated because obviously there's a whole lot of confusion of how Kyle Larson won that race. He didn't win the race, y'all. He was given the race. It was very clear Haley had him beat at the line. It was very clear Haley won the race. But by NASCAR rules, they weren't going to allow that. And to me, that creates the same confusion that NASCAR has said for many years that they don't want to be a part of. They want the fan to know that that person went over got the checker flag was tonight's winner. And so it contradicts several issues that NASCAR has, as you said. There's a yellow line at every track, but only the plate track is it a penalty to go below that yellow line. And I believe, as the penalty is supposed to read, it's only to improve position to go below the yellow line. Haley already was inheriting the lead before he went below the yellow line.
Yeah, I think it's all confusing. I think that NASCAR Board of Directors, the powers to be, they need to sit down and they need to revisit that rule. We just got a message on our 110 thread from Miss Lee. She said Stewie is leading the truck race. So
yeah, that's a hard time that we've run into with these Thursday night truck races. It's hard to really build a fan base to follow us on a night where there's live racing on. So we are competing against the live truck race at this point in time. And as I walk back to the monitor, and it looks like Friesen is in the lead with Ben Rhodes running second and Brandon Jones in the 51. He's running third. So
follow the race on Fox Sports Net, and you can listen to the show here. What is that, Race Chat Live? Craig, I read a silly season report today, and there's really not very much in the news, man. It's really the biggest thing that I've had to take away from is the question mark with Jimmy Johnson and who his sponsor is going to be. As for drivers, it's really not going to be much musical, not very many musical chairs at the end of the year when it comes to the elite group. Now, you know, it's been said that Stuart Haas is going to retain all four drivers. I've read a report that Kurt Busch has said that Stuart Haas has not inquired yet about a new contract. So the kind of conflicting reports there. Craig, is it bad for the sport to not have a musical chair season? Is it showing the weakness of the sport when you don't have drivers who are willing to change up and go to another race team?
No, I think it shows a comfortability factor. I think that everybody is happy right where they're at, or they could be holding it really close to their vest. But I want to back up to something you just said a couple of minutes ago. You read something. I didn't even know you could read.
Oh, wow. Shot over the bow. My goodness. Well, I'll be honest with you. I do have an audio reader, so anything that I read I can put into audio because, you know. Since Craig wants to call me out on being dumb, so yeah, that's me.
I'm just busted on you.
No, it's all good.
So, Adam, what do you think? Let's go back to the Xfinity series real quick, because I like the fact that we don't have silly season drama. I like it. I think it's good for the sport that the drivers, they appear to be content right where they're at, or they're holding it close to their vest, and they will release something once we get into the chase.
Craig, you do realize, but as we're talking about this, there's only been one Hall of Fame driver that has driven for the same
I'll take that back. There's two Hall of Fame drivers, but one of them, his career was cut short, and that's Davey Allison. But Jeff Gordon is the only Hall of Famer to never leave the team that brought him into the Cup Series. Every other driver, from Bobby Allison to Darrell Waltrip to Dale Earnhardt, they've all changed teams sometime in their career.
Yes.
How is this good for the sport for people to stay in the same place?
I think it shows a consistency. You'll see, though, silly season will break out right before the chase. I'm a firm believer in that. I really think that normally they do silly season announcements right before Daytona.
Well, man. I mean, we've had announcements as early as the beginning of the year. I believe it was Junior Johnson in 1990 or 91 that announced at the Daytona 500 the year before that they were switching to Ford the next year. I mean, that's a whole year left of having to drive a Chevy. They were going to go to Ford, but, obviously, Dale Jr. announced in May at the All-Star race that he was going to be going to Hendrick Motorsports, taking his talent to Hendrick Motorsports. We've seen moves made early, but in the last few years, it's been kind of a last minute, and I think a lot of this has to do with clauses in contracts saying that they're not allowed to discuss their current move situation until a certain period of time. Also, I would like to remind our race fans, that there was a deal made many years ago for Jamie McMurray to leave Ganassi Racing for Roush Racing, and the deal was signed a year early. Also, recently, Casey Kane had a deal to go to Hendrick Motorsports a year early. So there's definitely, in the past, things have been done different, but you still think there's time for some shakeups?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think right around the start of the chase, we'll start hearing it. If not, when we get to that disaster, they call a Roval.
I don't know how much of a disaster it's going to be. I think that that's a bad word to use when we were trying to attract race fans. I think that it will be unique. I think that there's some drivers very unhappy that this race is in the chase. I think that that's going to give us better racing and more odds. And as I'm watching right now, guys, Stuart Friesen is kicking tail, a 3-second lead over Ben Rhodes, 28 laps to go. We could be watching Stuart Friesen pick up his very first win here tonight on the NASCAR circuit, man. Oh, and he goes to pit. He is in pit lane. We'll give you more updates as the race closes out. So obviously it's, pit stops time, and it looks like Stuart Friesen is going to get two right side tires. Oh, they're checking for the left. No, he stalls it. Now they push him off, and he's back going towards the racetrack. Race fan Stuart Friesen, I just made my first pit call in NASCAR. How about that, Craig Moore?
You're all right. I don't care what they say about you down there in Mississippi.
I can read a monitor.
You can read. I'm so shocked.
Yes, definitely. So, 26 laps to go. We're everybody's going to pit. We'll see how much that hurt Friesen stalling on pit road. He's 37 seconds off the leader, but he's not a lap down yet. But it does look like that he may be going a lap down. No, not a lap down yet. So Stuart Friesen is still on the lead lap as they cycle through pit stops, green flag pit stops.
I don't even know where he qualified because I caught qualifying late. But I was watching the thing on the Roval for testing. The guys are there's no simulator they can do for it. Not unless they have NASCAR Heat 2. Because you can get it in the expansion pack. But there's not a whole lot they can do for it. They can't use notes. Drew Duplikenserfer said on Tuesday's edition of Race Hub that they brought their Watkins Glen setup for it. It's an aggressive setup. They were doing 175 miles an hour between 3 and 4 on track before they went into the chicane. So... You know, it could be – that's definitely going to be a pivotal race, and it's the last race of the first segment of the chase.
Yeah,
so,
it's gonna add some excitement there, Craig Moore. We've got the dirt track race at Eldora coming up next week. You excited about that?
I am. I will be. Hopefully, it's on Wednesday night, not Thursday. I'm excited for that. I will sit glued to the television and watch that. I think that'll be a hell of a race, and we already know who my pick's gonna be. But I gotta ask you a question. Did you ever check out NASCAR America on Wednesday nights?
I missed it, and then unfortunately I was not able to have time to go back and listen to it. But tell us about it, Craig Moore.
I'm sitting there, and I like Wednesdays because it's like our show. It doesn't appear to be all that scripted. So they're sitting around a big oak table. It's Rutledge Wood, who I don't – if he could get a job with NBC, we sure as hell should be able to. Him, Kyle Petty, and Dale Jr. They are sitting there, and they're talking about Ricky Stenhouse Jr. and how he made a couple of drivers mad and who he needs to apologize to and how he needs to do it and yada, yada, yada. And Dale says to Kyle, did you ever make – who did you make mad? He goes, well, at one time, he goes, your dad and I got into it. He said, on the track, he goes, your dad kept putting a bumper to me.
No.
He said he kept putting a bumper to me. Oh, nice fire. And he goes, finally I hooked him. He goes, in between 3 and 4. He said, and I spun him into the wall. Well, he'd come around and looked at the car. He'd come around, looked in my window, and afterwards said, what'd you do that for? And Kyle Petty, and he said this on national TV. They couldn't even hit the dump button quick enough. He goes, because I got tired of your shit. Well, you could have heard a pin drop, brother. After the laughter was all done. So,
I imagine so. Kyle Petty is playing with the SEC on that one. But obviously it is a little bit more laid back on Wednesday night with having Dale Jr. on. I think we mentioned it earlier, Craig, that, you know, they were kind of treating him like he was the Pope of racing. But he's kind of filling those shoes, is he not?
He is. He is. He's filling the shoes of a I don't want to say comedic, but he's a more down-to-earth style commentator. He's a fan at heart. And so it was... You know, it was cool.
Right.
I couldn't stop laughing when I heard Kyle Petty say that. And they all just started laughing. And I think Rutledge Wood wanted to go back and visit that comment. And they just wouldn't let him.
Yeah.
I can
understand.
There's an old rule in radio broadcasting is if you say something that you're not supposed to, don't go back and revisit it.
Yeah.
Because people may forget you said it.
Right.
Well, I obviously didn't forget. But
and it made for good TV, huh?
Oh, God, yes. God, yes. Friesen is currently running second with 2 laps to go. What does this tell you?
16 to go?
16 to go, and he's a half a second behind.
Yeah, he's got to step it up just a little bit. It's Ben Rhodes in the front. I did see earlier Ryan Newman will be racing the dirt track race at Eldora in a Jordan Anderson-fielded car. It's good to see. Also, another dirt tracker that has gotten the nod to race Eldora. I was trying to find the driver's name. I believe it's the number 63 car. Unfortunately, I can't find it right off the top there, though. But does Stuart Friesen kind of open the door for some of these other dirt track guys to honestly get a shot for this race, considering how well he's run?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's, and, you know, you and I were talking about this last week, and I don't think we talked about it on the air, but the new NASCAR game coming out, they actually put the late models back in it, the dirt late models.
Right.
So,
yeah, so many times, Craig, there's been dirt track people who said NASCAR has forgotten their grassroots. And honestly, Craig, in the last 2 years, it looks like NASCAR's extended the olive branch. They're trying to earn back their grassroots race fan base. They're adding a lot of stuff with dirt and all. Of course, slide job. I mean, you know, these are references used every weekend at your local short track or dirt track. NASCAR is trying to bring back their fan base, right?
Oh, absolutely. They have to bring back their fan base, or it's going to hurt them in the long run.
Here we are. He's almost a second behind. He was three tenths of a second off just a few minutes here. That fell back to 5 tenths. Stuart Friesen trying to close in on that 41 with just 12 laps to go. He used lap traffic there. That'll get him a little bit closer. Stuart Friesen on the back bumper of Ben Rhodes. Here they go. It looks like Ben's a little bit better through the corner, kind of a separation. Then we get into the straightaway. It looks like he's a little bit better in 3 and 4 than Friesen. Friesen is now into the back stretch, falling behind him. Man, oh, man, Stuart Friesen knocking on the door for his very first win in the Camping World Truck Series. I'm pulling for him. How about you, Craig?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm in awe. 0.36 to 0.33 seconds back. Ben Rhodes is having to check his rearview mirror. He's having to do a lot of checking up to see where Stuart is. And we're 10 laps to go, man. Stuart Friesen right there on the back bumper of Ben Rhodes. This is amazing, man. Stuart Friesen is a true testament. This guy was racing dirt tracks for 25 years. Now he's given the chance to race in trucks. This is only his second year, man. Only his second year in it, and he has been a threat to win in several races this year. It's coming down to the last few laps. He's a threat to win this one, too.
Oh, absolutely. Sorry, I have got a thing from AG Double Hockey set that came on. So, but he's a definite threat to win this race with 9 to go. And if he wins this race with 9 to go, Facebook will be blowing up here in upstate New York.
Oh, definitely. I foresee that for sure. Well, I hate to break the show away. It's 8 laps to go, but I feel like we've covered ground and we're all kind of tied to the TV now to see what Stuart can do. We can stay on air and see how Stuart finishes, or we can let everybody go and grab that TV remote and see if Stuart Friesen can track down Ben Rhodes, man.
The TV remote. We'll post his win after we get off the air.
All right, Stats, ma'am, you got anything to close with?
Just the fact that you should listen to my show tomorrow night. We got a returning guest and a new guest. First, we have Tommy Rogers Jr., who is a modified driver who drove for Danny Watts in the Whaler Modified Tour race last week at Riverhead. And then we have the owner of Mark Stewart's truck. That team won last night in the midweek event. So he'll be on talking about their season. So join me tomorrow night, guys.
All right, Stats, we appreciate that. Real quick, 5 laps to go. Stuart Friesen's falling back to about a second behind now. May not come in this one, guys, but he's definitely doing his best to try to track him down. Who's your pick this weekend, Stats?
I got Truex this week.
Truex Jr.
All righty. Mm-hmm. And Craig Moore, who do you have?
Right now, he's got Stuart Friesen.
Yeah, definitely. Is he already gone?
I don't know. Craig, you there?
Yeah, we probably lost.
Oh,
Craig.
He might. Yeah, he's gone. He's gone. The 518, he's gone.
Okay. All right. Well, guys, we thank y'all for listening. Maybe y'all can tune in for closing laps from Kentucky. Four laps to go. Ben Rhodes is the leader. Stuart Friesen is in second. So, you guys have a great night. We'll be back here next Thursday night for another episode, for episode number 23 of Race Chat Live. Thank y'all for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.